This podcast is given to you by Arloka David Smith, teacher and founder of the Dharma Mind Buddhist Group. For more information, please go to dharmamind.net.
Some of you, a number of you, came to our day retreat only 2 or 3 weeks ago in Woodchester, when I spoke about silence. The video, it was recorded, and you've all been notified that it is available for viewing, so I don't know. Those of you who didn't come down, I don't know if you've looked at it yet, but it's a very important one. I think they've all got their importance, but it does really touch at the heart of our type of training, and it's something that we should remind ourselves regularly of. But I'd like to just follow on a little bit from that. Because in the process of putting across the importance of silence, it can also be misunderstood. Silence is very, very important for us. Silence means to be still, and to be open, and to embrace silence. Ultimately, you know, when we talk about silence, we're talking about thoughts stopping, and that's a great aspiration, which is, for most of us, very unrealistic. I would imagine, well, I don't know, I can't really answer this, but we assume that a Buddha has gone beyond thought, but maybe that happens before Buddhahood. I can't testify to that. But paradoxically, although it is something that's not likely to be pulled off anytime soon, it is still nevertheless something that we should aspire to, something we should put in the centre of our training. That this is where we're going, as it were, to ultimately to be silent. And when we're silent, we've certainly discovered our true nature. And in that, we have a sense of openness and inclusivity. All the barriers, all the defences that we put up to defend ourselves, that we've that we've been erecting all of our lives, have now dropped, have now finished. And then you discover your true home, who you truly are, your true nature. So that's our aspiration. And we need to remind ourselves of that regularly. And also that when we come to sit, have that as to be as still and as silent of mind as possible. That also includes physically. Because if you're busy physically, then the chances of your mind being still you're diminishing the chances. If you're physically busy, then your mind is going to be busy, almost certainly. It's not a skillful support if you're physically moving. So this is why we try to bring stillness to our sitting meditation. So that it does help. It's an impious, a skillful way of taking away the distraction of the body, so that we can learn to let go of our thoughts that we're caught by most of the time. And so the talk I gave, it's only about 3 weeks ago, wasn't it? Was about the need to remind ourselves about stillness and how that is our aspiration. And stillness means, yes, ultimately that complete stillness. But in order for us to get close to that, we can't just aspire to be still on the cushion in this sort of environment or when we're at home, but see the need to learn to take stillness into our everyday life, stillness in the middle of activity. Of course, that is not something to be pulled off very easily. But the fact, but if we see that the skills that we can begin to bring to our training, we can begin to create that sense of spaciousness. Spaciousness and stillness are very close friends. Ultimately, stillness is spaciousness, but you can be spacious and not be still. You can have a sense of spaciousness, but you're not mentally still. But there is a degree of stillness. This is what you've got to learn. This is not a black and white process. My mind is busy. I can never be still. Don't go down that way, because that's not how it works. You have to see that this is an ongoing, as I like to say, a polishing process whereby you become ever more still by learning to be skillful in your life. On the cushion is where you're really hitting home to that aspiration, more so than any other of the postures. But to take that aspiration off of the cushion and to be as much as you can to bring awareness into your daily life. Awareness is stillness. These are all different words for the same function, the same reality, is that when you are aware, you have a degree of stillness, even though the mind is still chattering. The fact that you, by definition, the fact if you have awareness with what you're doing, you have a degree of silence. And that's the way you should look at it. You're not flicking any switches here. Oh, my mind is always going, therefore I can't do this. And then you become disheartened and you think, well, what am I bothering to do this for, because I'm never going to be able to pull this off. That's a wrong view. That's a Mitchard ditty, technically, if you know about these things, if you know any Pali. You see, you go down that road, you're going to become very disheartened, because you say, oh, are you kidding? Still, I can't even be still on the cushion. I've got no chance in my life, in my daily life, to be able to pull that off. So it's a waste of time. You mustn't look at this in that way. You get all doubts and you get all the negativity that comes with it, and then that, of course, just feeds that part of you that doesn't want you to do this, that wants you to be in a state of agitation continually. All you're doing is feeding that, and you become disheartened. Of course you do. And if you don't pack up altogether, you lose any sense of commitment or even enthusiasm. That goes, and you just, it becomes, you know, this is what I do every day, or this is, you know, I'm a Buddhist, I practice the Dharma, but these are just words, and it's just a label that you've hung around your neck. Because you imagine that this is, that you're not doing it, that you're not pulling it off, because you imagine it to be something other than what actually, how it works. And how it works, this isn't black and white, you don't flick switches here. But you try your best to bring awareness to your life. On the cushion, when you're aware, that's your opening the door to stillness. Because awareness and stillness are ultimately the same. Awareness is stillness. So you're opening the door, you're beginning to dampen down your attachment, the busy mind. You're beginning to knock a few little edges off it, if you like. And that's what we do. So there's a paradox at play here. There's a contradiction. The mind loves opposites. The mind loves, if you're not like this, then you're like this, and if you're like that, then you're not like this. It loves to oscillate between the two. It has a lot of trouble merging the two, and actually see that the Dharma isn't about opposites. it's a middle way, whereby it's neither one nor the other. So you're not still, but you're not completely off with the fairies. It's finding that middle ground that sort of incorporates both of those two experiences. It's very, very important to see this, because it's very, very easy to become disheartened with what we do, because your mind is thinking in opposites, that I should be like this, I'm not like this, and there's no way I'm going to be like this. Therefore, you don't have the commitment, and then you go through the motions. And that's because you don't see how it works. So, talking about silence, that stillness, the silence, the spaciousness, awareness, all the same word, all meaning the same thing. Nothing. Nothingness, emptiness, empty of dualistic thought and distractions. That's what I spoke about, and the need to be able to take it into your life, because this is a four posture practice. This isn't a thing that we pull off by sitting on the cushion all the time. This is incredibly dynamic. In fact, our training doesn't work in quietness. It actually works in engaging with life. And this is the important thing. And this is what separates us from other forms of practice, other forms, another sort of, I don't know, the sort of, how people think that this works, that somehow it's about disengaging with life and finding this thing, a form of samadhi, absorption, dhyana, again, all sorts of words that point to this concept of stillness and how important it is, and how, for many, that's virtually what it's all about. It's about shutting everything off and being very still and being very quiet. And so stillness, again, as I say, you can call it samadhi. That's the samatha aspect, a definition of samatha. We've got samatha and vipassana, which goes across pretty much the whole of Buddhism. But it's how you define these words. These things are never black and white. We've got to be so careful. And we've got to be careful that we don't end up parking ourselves in the wrong camp. Because this isn't about inactivity, about stillness, deadness. So that you are this, almost like this dead thing, which you can easily find yourself in if you get the whole concept of stillness wrong, because you think it's just about shutting off and disengaging with all sorts of activities. And that's how you can get it wrong. And for us, we must be very careful, because that's not our path. That's not... Well, it's not the spirit, it's just not what we do. But it can be very easily misunderstood, because concentration and stillness is universal. It's important for all of us. Whatever training you've got, this is the first step. It's to learn to be still on the cushion in your meditation. What comes after that is part two, as it were. But that stillness is always for all of us. But we have to understand the implications and what that stillness actually, what it's presenting, what it's there for. And I spoke, and it'd be very good if you can watch the video, because it does very much point to the stillness of mind, to the whole concept of no thought. But I want to sort of just get to part two, as it were, sort of cut this thing off at the pass, because, as I say, it can be so easily misunderstood. Our stillness is actually something that's very dynamic, as I've just touched on. what that means is that it deals with your experience, that it's incorporated in your. It is not exclusive to your everyday mind, your everyday life, in your everyday engagements. But actually, you bring that into the heart, and you learn to bring the two together and operate from that place of stillness, which is another word for awareness. So that your life becomes integral to the training. We don't push life to one side in order to fulfill this training. We actually embrace it, and we bring it into the heart of who we are. But we do that not, we can say, well, we do that anyway, but of course what happens is that we get completely lost in it. We lose all sense of awareness. We create karma for ourselves. We get lost and we suffer. We create attachment, grasping, and we suffer. That's what we're familiar with. But what we need now with that, and that's the way it is that there it is, and we're living our habits on a daily basis. But what we're going to do now is we're going to bring some sense of stillness into that, so that we have something to work with. We can begin to see how we're caught by the world that we create. But you're not going to be able to see that attachment that we've got if you don't have awareness, if you don't have a sense of stillness to some degree, so you can observe. And when you observe, you're observing from that place that's not a part of the madness that you're observing. You're observing from a place that you're beginning to nurture, that you're beginning to wake up to. That place that most of us we're not familiar with, we're not skillful enough to be with it, that place that we're beginning to learn when we're on the cushion, that place of stillness, that we find the stillness and we nurture it as much as we can on the cushion by letting go, by when our thoughts come, when the pictures come, when our habits come, when they come, we have a brightness that we let them go, that we don't engage with them. We don't have opinions about them. We don't start fighting them or suppressing them. We don't do that. And that is absolutely, well, that's no form of Buddhism. I don't know if people do things like that. But if you think this is about manipulating your thoughts or engaging with them in some way, trying to push them out the way or suppress them, or don't even begin to go down that path, because all you're doing is just reinforcing the self. It's nothing more than an ego trip, and you will never be free. But it's a great temptation to do that, because you want to be still. Thoughts come, so you react to them, and you try and sort of do things with them. Be very, very careful. This is very subtle. And if you go down that road, all you're doing is just, you're actually reinforcing them. You're actually reinforcing the sense of self. So we learn to wake up to them, to see them, to see the attachment that we have, that we chase them. And with that brightness, with that stillness, that ever maturing stillness, we can see them and leave them alone. Actually, they're nothing to do with you. You make them your property, but actually, they're not your property. You turn them into something that you want to hold on to. If you leave them alone and leave them to their nature, they will come and they will fade. They will come and they will fade. They will come and they will fade. And it's only when you do this that they become something. And that's what you have to learn to see, to identify, and do something that you've never done in your life, i.e. you don't chase your thoughts. You've never done that in your life. You've always reacted to your thoughts. You like them or you don't like them. It's got nothing to do with like and dislike, but you've always engaged with them in some way or another. You've always got opinions about them. There's always some reaction to them. Now you're learning just to leave them alone, and the only way you're going to be able to leave them alone is through stillness, to be able to observe them, see them coming, and catch yourself before you chase them. You go, no, and you leave them. And if you leave them, some things are stronger than others, of course, some thoughts, because you've invested in them in the past, and they become big things for you. But slowly you learn to leave them alone, whatever they may be, good, bad, right, wrong, whether you like them, whether there's some fantastic desire, whether some great fear that emerges, you leave them alone. And whatever subject they're covering, whatever they're about, they all have that same nature. And if you can learn to leave them alone, they will fade. They're quite neutral and they're quite empty. You turn them into something. That's what you learn through stillness. So the more that you can put that into place, the more still you get, the more you can gather yourself up, the more that you're with yourself, the more that you're alive and you know yourself. This isn't about falling asleep. You become alive. There's a bit of a crossroads here, because that's quite a nice place to get to get a bit of stillness and a bit of peace and quiet from yourself, basically, and all the things that you create. You get and it's a lovely, tempting place to enjoy. And why not? So you should enjoy it. And there's nothing wrong with enjoying those experiences. But you're at a bit of a crossroads here, because you could quite easily think, well, this is rather tasty, I quite like this, and I'm beginning to put this off. Yeah, don't mind all that insight rubbish. Let's just nurture this so that sense of buoyancy, the happiness, rapture that can come through just being still, not engaging with anything, that can soon begin to be your experience. And it's very, very, very seductive. And yet, paradoxically, we have to be very careful with that, but at the same time, we also want a bit of it. This is where you've got to start to be a bit cute about these things. This isn't black and white. It's, oh, no, I don't want all that. That's easy to do that. And it's also easy just to go and grab it. Again, you see the opposites at play here. this is what we indulge in. You can watch your mind. Your mind is going psh, 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 like this all the time. And to see that and to get to know that, somehow we got to learn to park ourselves in the middle. Park ourselves in it. That's not excluding, but that's also not being caught by the two opposites. That's what you've got to feel. We don't do that. We don't have experience that. We're certainly never taught it. It doesn't really relate to anything in life, really. It's not a sort of way of great achievement in life. You always have to chase things, this one or that one. This is how we become successful. But the Dharma isn't like that. It's about, you've got to feel your way into it and see how we don't exclude anything and yet we don't get carried away by anything. And all of this is coming from that place that we're beginning to find, that stillness there, so that you can catch yourself before you, before you start, no. You come into the middle and park yourself there. And that's what we do when we get stillness. We need it, it is essential. Because in stillness is where you'll find the Dharma. You won't find the Dharma in the world of attachment. You'll find the Dharma in the place of non-attachment. But at the same time, we're not excluding. It's very easy to push it. And this is where you can fall into this dark cave, as the Chinese call it. Where you just go into the dark cave, but you don't see anything. But it's not an unpleasant place to be. A great temptation, and I think you'll find there's a lot of that temptation in Buddhism. I've mentioned it before, I used to experience it in Sri Lanka with some of the monks who had no pretensions of anything else. But they very much rose to the bait. They were very much attached to the whole notion of samadhi and jhana, and which they loved and enjoyed. But they themselves would be quite willing to tell you that there's no insight, there's no liberation there. It's all samsara. It's the nice aspects of samsara, but that's all it is. And that's it's a great temptation. So what we do, yes, we want the silence, but also we want some liveliness. We need some life. We need some life in our stillness. You see the paradox? Because without that, we're never going to get to know ourselves. There's no insight. So we have to stop ourselves from going too far, if you ever get that opportunity, of being sucked into that stillness. But begin to, the bit that you've got, as it were, which is awareness, you've got that awareness, is that you begin to have that as a tool to penetrate who you are. And who you are is this samsaric thing of opposites that's playing all the time. This is why the mind is never still. So you've always got the mind to watch. Even though you've got stillness there, you can have the stillness, but you can bring the stillness to the activity of the mind. And that activity, that stillness, of beginning to look into your activity, this is called vipassana, this is insight. But the insight, and the insight, deliberation, is coming from a place of stillness, and yet it's active. You've got to feel this. This, you could easily take this apart logically, because it's a contradiction, isn't it? How can you be busy and still at the same time? But actually, you can. You can learn to bring that sense of awareness, not just on the cushion, but into your daily life. Everything from when you wake up in the morning, you can be aware, you can wake up, the mind is going, oh, another day, we're going to go to work, da-di-da, the routine, the boredom, da, all of that. Be alive to all of that. Be alive to it. Look into it. Not just be alive to it, but actually take the opportunity to rather than just passively look, although that, in a sense, that's okay. At least you're aware that there's all this attachment that's playing itself out, but also you've got some material there to look into, to get to the bottom of, to see where it's coming from. Is there something that can be done about this, or am I going to be caught with this forever? Or is there a way out? Can I get to the bottom of this? So all this attachment that I clearly have, can that fall away? Well, you can. So you've got the stillness and you've got the activity. You've got the stillness and you've got the illumination. So you have the silent illumination. Illumination, again, can be misunderstood. We like to use those concepts, silent illumination. But illumination can give you a sense of inactivity. When something is illuminated, it's bright and you can see it, like the sun. Is giving us light now, but it's not exactly active, is it? There's light, there's illumination in this room, but it's not busy. It's very still, actually. So you have to be a bit careful with that too. You need the light, you need the illumination. Otherwise, you wouldn't. You know, like in this, I say, in this room, if the sun wasn't illuminating this room, never mind the lights. If the sun wasn't illuminating this room, it would be dark. We wouldn't be able to see anything. So we need illumination to light the thing up, so we've got something to look at. So when we can see, we can then begin to investigate. This is all coming from the illumination, because illumination actually, in the dharmic sense, isn't something that's still. It's something very alive, and it's just full of wisdom. It's full of knowledge and knowing. The illumination knows. It's a knower. It knows. It's not dead. But we need to use that illumination, the silence and the illumination. It's not a place of parking yourself in stillness, but a place to come from the stillness. And without the stillness, you're not, the vipassana, the insight, is not going to work unless you've got stillness. They're hand in hand, they are one. We're using both sides of the coin, as it were. We're not just sticking to one side, but when it comes still, that silence is actually pregnant with wisdom. It knows. So we turn ourselves from that silence, we turn ourselves into getting to know ourselves. Just bring it down onto everyday terms. Know yourself. In your daily life, be aware of your habits, what you get caught by. The defences, the way you look after yourself continually through your daily activities, especially when you're engaging with other people. Be aware, see how you're looking after yourself. See how you talk and how you always invariably coming from that place of looking after me, and how you've got the defences up. You're not an open person, actually. Maybe sometimes, but a lot of the times we're not open at all. We're actually very, very closed off within ourselves. We've got all this stuff that we've built around ourselves, and then we become this diminished being. And if you look, you see that there is great fear there, that you are looking after yourself, that you always got to keep these defences up, that are not sort of tangible, obvious things, but mental things that you've always got to be reinforcing, always got to be, so that you look after yourself. The big bad world, and all the things and all the people in it, and all these, everyone's looking after themselves, and you've got to look after yourself too. So you end up being, see, what a diminished being you are, how small you've made yourself. And then you'll see why you suffer. You know, we're not who we could be. We could be something that has no barriers, no limitations, no fear. It's open and embraces the whole of life, and embraces this incredible experience that we could enjoy so much more, because it's, I don't know what word you. It's amazing, it's wonderful, it's mysterious, and it's there for us to to partake of, not to close ourselves away from, which is what we do. And then we become fearful and we become lonely. This is where loneliness comes from, because I'm doing this. I'm creating a space between me and the world, my experience. This is where the illuminating, the waking up begins to take place. But you have to engage in it. You have to engage with it. You have to see the barriers. Oh, no, we don't do barriers anymore. I'm going off into the dark cave. No, we don't go into the dark cave. We open up and we look at it. This is what makes this training so challenging. We open to it as much as we can. But we do it with awareness. And awareness is that place of stillness. So the stillness becomes something incredibly dynamic. We're not using it just to shut ourselves off from and enjoy the bliss. But we're actually using it, we're turning it around, and we're using it, we're opening up, so it becomes something of activity. So the definition of samadhi for us isn't one of a quietistic experience, but one of activity. It's samadhi in action, it's called. And it's the very spirit, the very essence of this type of training. This is what defines us. This is what defines us. Because this doesn't define all the different training choices that you have in Buddhism. But for us, we turn ourselves into life and we open up to it and say yes to it. And when we don't experience life in that way, we can see what all the barriers that we put in place for ourselves and how we maintain them. We reinforce them, and we see that through that process, how we diminish ourselves and how we get this sense of unsatisfactoriness, that we are not fulfilled. We diminish ourselves into a fraction of our potential. This is called suffering. This is why we suffer. This is why life is unsatisfactory. Suffering is a very strong word, but life is unsatisfactory. If you felt life was satisfactory, you wouldn't be here in the first place. None of you would be here. But so clearly there's something not right that we want to get to the bottom of. Because we know, well, that's something I've always found anyway, that actually it's got to be better than this. When I used to look at myself before I came to this, I sort of look at this world and just think, my God, this is just so amazing. And then I look at myself and see how, well, unhappy that I was a lot of the time. And then look at it and think, what on earth, what's your problem? What's the reason for this? Here you have something given to you on a plate. Here, look at this wonderful thing that you can partake of, enjoy. And yet you feel rubbish a lot of the time. That's a polite word. You feel rubbish a lot of the time. Why? That's what set me off. If you don't get that sense, you won't be doing this. There's something all of you feel that's not right, otherwise you wouldn't be here. Well, that's the first step. First of all, you acknowledge that. Now you want to do something about it. And the way you do something about that is that you have to get to know why you're like that. And there's no good reading books, listening to people, sitting there listening to me. That's not going to do it for you. It may help you, it may guide you, it may clarify a few things, but it's not going to do it for you. You've got to do it yourself. Nobody can do it. We don't, if I can say, we don't have any gods in our religion. We can't call on somebody else to come and help us and to do it for us. It'd be great if we could. Wouldn't it? If I just get somebody to come and do it for me. Which is what a lot of people in this world do, actually. But we can't do that. We've got to accept responsibility for ourselves and see that we are the creator of who we are. And from there we can begin to put in place this whole process of change. It's called letting go of what we hold on to. That's how change takes place. And then what takes its place is not me, it's who we really are, begins to shine through. But this is not going to happen without insight. And insight means that we have to, that's not just a word and a lovely idea, but it means we have to live life, we have to learn to open up to it, we have to learn to see our limitations, we have to see the barriers that we create for ourselves. And learn to challenge them. It's called getting out of your comfort zone. Are you prepared to get out of your comfort zone when you're presented with something that makes you recoil, makes you look after yourself? Are you prepared to step out, take a chance? Experience the fear, experience the vulnerability that will bring. Or do you want to stay in your comfort zone all of your life? Because if you want change, if you want that whole process of letting go, you have to learn to get out of your comfort zone. This is when this training becomes real. It can be a lovely idea in theory, lovely, great words and great, you know, great things to aspire to. But at the end of the day, you've got to get out there and do it. Get your hands dirty, because there's no other way. And this is what stillness will bring you to those places. Before, blah, 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 you didn't know, you just didn't know the whole of your experience there. But now, the stillness is bringing you to aspects of yourself that then you can begin to waken up to. So the stillness and then begin to look into it and see what you do to yourself and see that the way beyond suffering is to let go of these habits. And to let go of these habits means that you have to get out of your comfort zone, out of your bubble. However that bubble may be, however it is, we've all got different, but all of our bubbles have got different characteristics, but it's still the same essence. This is when this training becomes alive. This is when it goes beyond theory. This is when you're doing it. You're tasting the ice cream. You're not theorizing what does an ice cream taste like. Oh, it's like this. And on you go. You won't know what ice cream tastes like until you lick it. That's the training. You've got to do it. When you do it, then you know it. And in that doing, that's where things can change. And it's the stillness that's brought you to that place. And then it's the insight, the vipassana, the looking into, the getting to know, the opening up, the experimenting, waking up and seeing the doing, the activity. It's active. This is not passive. This is active. And yet it's coming from a place of stillness. You can be active. We're all active in our lives. Maniacs, most of us are. But this is a different sort of activity. This is coming from a place. There's a part of you that's beginning to engage with the activity. That's not a part of the activity. That's never been a part of the activity. That's never been caught. That's never been a part of the samsaric dualistic world that you've created, that you're attached to. That silence is coming from that place of the unconditioned. And you're inviting it into your life, into your activity, into your madness. You're inviting it into. And when you invite it into, you then create the possibility that you begin to see what you're doing to yourself. And the challenges that, and you want to change it. You don't want it anymore. It's rubbish. It's hurting yourself against a brick wall all the time. It's rubbish. You don't want to do it. But it will show you what needs to be done, as it were, how you need not to be the victim of your habits, but to learn to step out of your bubble in your everyday situations and make yourself vulnerable. Because you will be vulnerable, because you're not familiar with that. You won't have your defences up. You will be vulnerable, you'll be open, and that's not an easy place to go to. But you have to trust and to experiment and do your best. Do your best, that's all you can do. And then you recoil, fair enough, next time you come and you recoil and you get more and more familiar with it, more and more familiar, until you can step outside and let go of something that's diminished you all of your life. That's not passive. And yet it's coming from a place of something that's illuminating, that's seeing, that's knowing. And you're not doing it from a place of stupidity, but you're coming from a place that knows that the way out of suffering is to face up, is to open up to things, to face up, not in an ego willful way. We don't do willfulness, but in a way that you're prepared to go with circumstances, whatever the situation may be, open up to it and do your best. This is called tasting the ice cream. We are offered this opportunity almost certainly on a daily basis, maybe several times a day. Small things, big things. Awareness, the stillness, will become aware. You will wake up to the small things and the big things. You'll see them. Then you will then be given the opportunity to challenge them. Not challenge them in the sense of a something, I'm going to challenge you, but in that the circumstances are inviting you to respond in this way. Are you going to respond in this way, or are you going to respond in a way where you're clearly looking after yourself, and you're not being skillful, you're not doing the right thing, you're just looking after this sense of me, and by doing that you're just reinforcing your imprisonment. So you can see how active this is. So when we talk about silence, don't misunderstand it. And when we talk about, you know, the vipassana and the waking up to who you are, that is not going to be genuine and authentic if it's not coming from that place that's beginning to wake up. Because the ego can move the furniture around quite easy. You can see something in your life and say, oh, that's not right. You know, and then you create another situation, but you're still trapped in the world. You're still just going from one habit to another habit. You're just changing one persona for another persona. We can do that. There's plenty of Buddhists who change their personas. I mean, Buddhism is a persona. That's not the real you. So you can put hats on. I'll tell you the number of hats I got now. If anybody wants to borrow a hat any time, just come and let me know. This isn't about just changing your hat all the time, which is what you do. It's what you do in the world. This is about throwing them away. It's having no hats at all, and that takes a lot of doing. You feel very vulnerable. You lose that self-identity, you lose the identity that you've created for yourself, and you can become, well, you're losing your defences, and that's not an easy place to go to. But this is what you'll be invited to put into place when you bring that, the activity of the dharmic activity, which shines through stillness, which shines through awareness, that comes from awareness, where you begin to see. And not to react and to put something else in, but to open yourself and to let go of this person that you've created that is your jailer, is what's keeping you diminished. So I wanted, because I know it can be misunderstood, and I've watched, because I have to watch the videos, because I've got to put names on them and blurb and stuff. It's not because I'm infatuated with what I see or anything. It's part of my job. So when I look at it, I can see, blimey, I can misunderstand that quite easy. And because I don't work from a script, it's very easy to say something and for it to be misunderstood. And I think, I should have said this, should have said that. But I think actually it's okay. But it's a perception that actually is very ancient. It's a perception. There's got a lot of controversy around it, because there's such a strong emphasis of just letting go, of just sitting, of just being aware. And this goes back many centuries, actually, and it was a cause of much controversy and teachers misunderstanding, because that's what it is, misunderstanding what they're hearing and thinking this is a quietistic thing, the thing of going into a cave and just shutting everything down. Because silence is such a strong feature of what we do, that when we sit, we let go and we just come to that awareness. But that's only a part of the story. That's only seeing it from one angle, and getting it wrong. And we must be careful not to get it wrong. We must see the paradox, the merging of stillness and activity, of bringing those two together. But that stillness is coming from a place of seeing and knowing. It's not a dead thing. Silence is not dead. It is actually full of knowing. It's the knower that knows. If only you can give it space, will shine through and break those bonds of samsara. But we need to always be engaging. And I wanted to get that message over to you. And I want you to ponder it and realise that activity means that you are engaging with yourself. It's not some passive escape route that we're on. This is not an escape route. Not if you get it right. You can have it as an escape route if you like. This is your choice. You'll come to a crossroads. Think, oh, right, this is quite nice. I can forget all about me and I don't have to be bothered with all these things that I'm bothered with. You can go down that road if you like, or you can stop and say, no, hang on, that's not going to solve anything. Ultimately, that will come and bite you, because it's impermanent. It will bite you and you'll end up with nothing. There, you've cultivated something which is very precious, the ability to be still, have some focus, to have some awareness. That is so, so precious. So precious. That you need to take it before it gets corrupt. Take it and turn it in its correct way so that you can begin to see yourself and use it to get to see and know yourself. And in that knowing is where change takes place. And when you change, that's when you become free. That's when you become liberated. Liberation isn't a black and white thing. This thing called awakening, enlightenment. Awakening starts right there, where you begin to see yourself. Just awareness itself is awakening, actually. And from there, it's all about degrees. You begin to see and you begin to let go. You begin to see what you do to yourself. Because you're prepared to engage with yourself. You begin to see and you begin to say, no, I'm not doing that anymore. That's the merging. That's silent illumination. That's, as I understand it, that takes away any misunderstanding that this is just about finding a quiet place. And in fact, as I said earlier, if you get it right, it is a place of wondrous activity. that is just so full of activity. And what's wondrous about it is you have the opportunity at every moment, not occasionally, but continually, you have the opportunity of liberation. I think this is the sudden and the gradual thing. That actually we're not going somewhere to get to a place to wake up. We're waking up continually. That something, a habit comes, something you've been doing all your life, something you're so familiar with comes along, and you have a different perspective. You have a different way of seeing. You see it, and you. That's called awakening. That's, as I understand it, that's why this is called sudden, and it's one thing after the other. So you have the opportunity every moment in your life for awakening. But it's got to come from that place. It's got to come from the right place, not from the ego, but from the place of stillness, to see it. And you break something that you've had all your life. And then 2 minutes later, you've got another opportunity. And another one, and another one, and another one. All the time, awakening, breaking those bonds. And it's all coming from that stillness. So please give this some space for your training, and try to grow into it, and get a real sense that of what this training is, the essence of what this training is really about. Okay.